Hello once again, everybody. Thanks for stopping by Hey Man, It's Okay, a men's mental health podcast. I'm Sky, one of your hosts this week.
Hello, guys, and I'm Ryan, and I'm a licensed psychotherapist out of Newport Beach, California. We got Sky here from Seattle, and we've got a special guest today, Sky.
Yes, we do. We have our next guest is another man who's very passionate about mental health, and you may have seen him on TikTok, and I'm really excited to have them on. We've got Logan from Dad Bods and Beards. Welcome to the show, Logan.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. This is nice. Thanks.
Yeah, I was really excited to be able to have you on here because after seeing your content and seeing the things that you've been putting out, I knew that we could have a really cool conversation. So I just appreciate your time and stopping by just to hang out with us for a little bit. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and let's talk about your mental health journey a little bit.
Yeah, first and foremost, do not be afraid to interrupt me because as I'm sure Ryan is being bipolar, we have the tendency to hop on the freight train of excitement and we just have a hard time getting off. That is until we get depressed and then the train slows down. But yeah, my name is Logan Peterson. I am a full-time social media content creator and podcaster, co-host and founder of the Dad Bods and Beards podcast, which is also a men's mental health brand. I was able to go full-time with all that this year, earlier in January. But I've been playing around. Thank you. I thought I worked a lot of hours before. And I've had a lot of people, some people kind of chuckle when you say you do social media and podcasting full-time because everyone's, oh, every middle-aged white guy has a podcast. I'm like, which is pretty true, right? But the fun thing is that I get to take my passion and turn it into something that I can feed my babies with and continue on my life with my wife and feel really fulfilled. And we have a lot of fun ways of doing that to where we can provide a lot of value to the different men and even a lot of women out there that need to understand mental health awareness and how all that applies to men's mental health without it being a, hey, buy my course and I'm going to teach you how to be a real man and I'm going to profit off of you guys, as opposed to we go after companies and corporations and different sponsorships to help engage in the community and be able to provide for ourselves that way without the whole predatory coaching programs and things like that that exist out there. Because as you guys know, there's all the big alpha bros all over social media.
Oh, sure.
And I pride myself in being actively trying to redefine the definition of masculinity, which is a one of vulnerability, emotional intelligence, but still being able to kick the guy down the stairs that broke into your house in the middle of the night. So it's just that appropriate level of awareness, like I said, emotional intelligence, but also still being able to step up to the plate when it comes time to make the changes, to be there for someone else. And we've all heard the adage of, I'd rather have another man's head on my shoulder than his casket. So for me, we can get really deep into this. I don't want to start trailing off into it right now, but the whole gist of how it started was I was diagnosed bipolar in 2017 after years and years of, as you can probably imagine, Ryan, you probably within your career just left unchecked, unmedicated, and unbalanced. And once I finally started getting some clarity, realizing I have to take care of myself, not just for myself, but for the people that love me the most. And so what I try to do is I'm trying to create the spaces and the tools and the resources that 27-year-old Logan really could have used back in that time frame. Mm.
What was it? So you got that diagnosis. And for anybody out there who's not entirely familiar with bipolar, which is often confused with, I think, what might be like borderline personality disorder. And a lot of people will throw out this, oh, that person's bipolar because they were hot and cold within the same day. They have intense emotions. When in reality, bipolar is really signified by anywhere from 4 days to almost 2 weeks, depending on the type of bipolar, of what's deemed mania, when it's almost, and I'd love for you to describe it, but clinically, it's almost like everything in you is ramped up. There's often like a belief that all your decisions are great. There's a little lack of self-reflection on kind of what's going on. And I think in the public eye, Kanye might be one of the best examples. And this isn't to say, I'm not saying anything about his opinions and the actual content of kind of what comes out. But when you actually see that ramp up of behavior from him that we often see for a week or two, often kind of like a disappearing for maybe a few weeks or a month. But it really is signified by this manic state and then what's often followed by a depressive state. So yeah, Logan, maybe, yeah, fill us in.
Yeah, so for me, it's obviously, and to people who don't know, is there's primarily, like, when people think bipolar, if they know anything about bipolar, a lot of times they're like, oh, are you type one or are you type two? Which one is more depressive and one is more like, and the other one being more like hypermania. And then there's all the different categories within there of like extended periods of depression, extended periods of mania. And then there's the rapid cycling where that's what the cliche of, oh, they're being bipolar, where you go high, low, and you get between those within sometimes matter of minutes, hours, days, and then sometimes you can stay in there for a long period of time. I've experienced it's traumatic, and it's very traumatic for those that you are closest to. I don't know all the statistics, and I don't claim to, but I know it's over 90% of bipolar marriages and partnerships tend to end in divorce because the other side of the partnership just takes a beating because it is very narcissistic. It is very unempathetic. It is very self-centered. It is very, I am the king. I am the best. And then it's, I'm worthless. I've got nothing in this life worth living for. And you erode your interpersonal relationships because you are stuck inside your own head to a level that is just mind-boggling. And then you feel these overwhelming feelings of guilt when you do have those small shreds of clarity. Because you're like, I'm ruining my life. I'm ruining my wife's life. I'm a monster to my kids and I'm not this guy, but because it's this chemical imbalance. Yeah. And I've been through massive amounts of different types of therapies, massive amounts of different types of medications. I've found what works really good for me. And I've found that not what works for me doesn't always work for everybody else. I've relied really heavily recently on some different psychedelic therapies, and they work wonders for me. And I've gotten off of a lot of the heavier SSRIs and things like that. But in the past, those saved my life. Where it all came to a head for me is it was years and years ago, I was misdiagnosed as only being ADHD, which what's funny is with bipolar, you tend to have one or two extra little ingredients added in there. It's not just bipolar. It's like, I'm this cool little cornucopia of just like God or the universe or whoever's up there or whatever. Just cause let's give them a little bit of everything. So I've got the great, fun, debilitating anxiety at times. I've get the ADHD through the roof. And then obviously the bipolar, which I get the swings of depression. And I've also had some extremely traumatizing hallucinogenic events where they thought I was schizophrenic, and the same thing, borderline personality. And basically these things compound when they're left unchecked. And then you add in the stresses of life. And then you add in the stresses of compounding mistake because of this unmedicated, undiagnosed, unchecked everything. And then your brain is not in any position to try to fix these issues that you caused. So that's where I've seen in my experience, and I don't speak for everybody, that's where you see a lot of men, and obviously we know that the suicide rate among men takes up about 80% of the suicide rate. And you get overwhelmed. And then sometimes it's situational, sometimes it's seasonal, sometimes it's clinical. And when these problems compound and then you are faced with a situation where you feel like you can't get out of it, that's when the little asshole in the back of your brain starts telling you the really bad stuff. So for me, it was a lot of those things compounded over the years. I wasn't fully diagnosed until I was 27 after a pretty traumatic I was hallucinating. I felt at the time I was raised in a pretty high demand religion at the time. And I don't identify as being a part of that religion anymore, but I very, very deeply believed in angels and demons. And I felt and saw and experienced demons chasing me for years. They would be inside my head. They would be standing on the street corner while I was driving in the car with my wife and my daughter. And I could hear them talking to me from across the street inside my car. And it was very traumatizing, to say the least. And then I would have blackout periods where I don't remember decisions I made. But then at the same time of all that happening, you have these moments where you're like, I just had the best business startup idea in the world. No one's going to hold a candle to this. And there was a couple that I attempted, and some did okay. but then you lose interest and then you make a mistake and you come up with an excuse. Now you're a liar and now you deceive just because you're robbing Peter to pay Paul to keep things going, because at one point Logan was so over the top about this idea and now he's not anymore. So you can see how this could be traumatizing to somebody that you are sharing your life with and you're creating life with and you're raising children with. And my wife was holding on for dear life. That girl saved my life. I'm blessed to still have her in my life today. I am blessed to still be waking up by her every single morning. But there was a period in time where I didn't. And I wrote her 3 different suicide letters where in those moments, I was done. And there hit one point where I had a, quote, possession moment that I was slamming my head on the front door screaming, "Get out of my head." And I woke up and came to my wife, who was pregnant with our son at the time, sitting on the ground, traumatized, tears coming out of her eyes, holding her stomach. And that's an image I will never get seared. That was seared into my brain, realizing that my wife was more terrified of me than she'd ever been of anything in her entire life. And it was in that moment where some conversations started happening with my parents. And mind you, all of this happened while I was working 2 desks away from my father for 2 years straight. And as men, we get really good at putting on masks. It's almost masculinity, right? Like you put on this mask that I'm okay. Like, yeah. I'm okay. I'm fine. F-I-N-E, right? You guys ever saw the old movie Italian Job? Freaked out, insecure, neurotic, emotional. Yeah, I'm fine. But worked 2 desks away from my dad. But every day at lunch, I would go and get probably 3,000 calories worth of McDonald's. And I would sit there in my car and I would cry and I would eat just to feel better. And I became addicted to food. And in that time period, I was addicted to Adderall. I was taking about 120 milligrams, about 120 per day of Adderall.
That's good.
Going days without sleeping. And everything was just falling apart. And it finally came to a point where I was going to be taken to a psychiatrist's office. And as a man who'd never done more than just dentist, eye doctor, regular doctor, I'm like, no, I don't need a psychiatrist. I'm just stressed out. I'm just going through some stuff. I'll figure it out. That's what I was telling myself. But I hit a point where the decision was made for me. And I'm very blessed to understand that not everybody has that opportunity where people make a decision for you. And it came down to a point where I met up with my parents, my wife, my pregnant wife, and my infant daughter in the back seat. We met up with my parents, and I was handed off to my mommy and daddy as a 27-year-old married man with children to be taken care of for the night until I could get to a psychiatrist appointment in the morning. So I'm going further and further down the rabbit hole of feeling like I'm being emasculated at this point.
Yeah.
And next thing I know, I'm laying in my childhood bedroom at my mommy and daddy's house, and my wife and my daughter are 45 minutes away. And I'm done. I just felt completely done. I felt worthless. I felt like this is the problem with men's mental health when it comes to the suicide rate and suicidal ideation, is that a lot of people, and as you guys know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, is that you got a lot of guys out there that say, oh, that's took the easy way out, or that it's weak, or that it's a sin, or some of these, all these ridiculous excuses that people make. 9 times out of 10, at least in my experience of stories I've heard and people I've spoken to and people we've interviewed on our show, we feel as men that we are doing those that we love the most a favor. Like, we are doing it for them. We are ridding ourselves from their life because we are dragging them down. We feel like by removing ourselves from the equation, yes, we will end our pain to a degree. But we feel like we're eliminating the pain from their life when I know for a fact, and I'm sure you guys do as well. And we spoke to a gal on our podcast who lost her husband to suicide just over 5 years ago. It adds insurmountable pain. It adds insurmountable grief and guilt and all of these things when you leave behind the people that are fighting for you. And so your brain in fight or flight and panic mode is just, let's be done. We're a burden. We are a problem. And that could not be further from the truth. And I'm a big, tough man. I started falling down that rabbit hole. And I don't remember exactly what happened from that point, but I blocked out. And I woke up just over 3 miles away from where I was supposed to be at my parents' house. My phone was dead, and I had been running from police reports. I was running at oncoming traffic on a 2-lane road. And I woke up in a pharmacy parking lot. And instantly was one of those panic moments of, I don't know where I am, being waking up a sleepwalker type situation. And come to find out that, you know, the police had been looking for me. My parents were looking for me. My phone was dead. I found a guy, thankfully, this is late at night, who was in the parking lot who let me use his phone. And I called my wife. And immediately, as a man, I am immediately making excuses. I've been gone for who knows how long at this point. And I call my wife. She answers the phone. She's hysterical. And I'm just like, it's okay. It's okay. I'm fine. And my 5'2" cute little blonde wife telling me is this big burly bearded guy. She's, no, it's not okay. This is not okay. I'm done with this. I'm done with you acting like everything is fine and that you're going to fix it. There is something wrong and you need help. And I think that's a pivotal point that a lot of guys go through is when somebody confronts them head on, and we either go one of two directions. We either go, you're right, or we double down on that toxic masculinity. We're like, no, I'm fine. And I was still stuck in that limbo. And then my dad comes barreling into the parking lot in his truck. My mom comes barreling in the parking lot in her big Suburban. And then it's followed by police. And I'm still not okay in this moment. And I've never done anything ever to get me in trouble with the law. And the fight or flight that took off when I saw those lights, like I had done something illegal. Like I felt like I needed to run from the police because my brain chemistry was so off.
Yeah.
That I grabbed my mom's door, on the passenger door in her Suburban, and I just start pulling on it, and it's locked, and she has the window cracked, just cracked enough. And I'm like, Mom, let me in. And she's terrified. I can see the look on her face. And then the wheels start turning. I'm like, why is everybody so scared of me right now? I'm Logan. I'm just the happy-go-lucky fun guy. And then the police come up and they're like, hey, buddy. And then you're like, whoa, no. And it just starts escalating from there. And they don't know what's going on. They're just trying to do their job. They see this big, bug-eyed, crazy guy who's been missing for an hour. And the first guy, a little assertive. And as a dominance guy myself, I was not okay with that. I was a little bit hot-headed. But then, like I said, call it God, call it universe, call it coincidence, whatever. The right person, was in the right spot at the right time. Mm. Her name is Katie. And she is a police officer for the Elk Grove Police Department out of Sacramento, California, where I was raised. And she stepped in. She just happened to have put two and two together that there was cars calling about a guy running down the wrong side of the road, running at cars. And we have a missing 20-something-year-old man. And they roughly were in the same area. They were separate calls that were coming in. And she thought, I'm going to go look in this area where we're getting reports that this guy is freaking out in a parking lot. And she stepped in, and I don't remember all the words that she said, but she got me to back off and to calm down and to start listening to reason. And she somehow was able to get me to voluntarily just hop in the car with her. And she said, look, I'm going to take you to the hospital. There's obviously some stuff going on. I can get you in through the back door. She said, we don't have to march you through the front door. She said, we'll just sneak you right in the back. I can get you straight into a room. You've got some stuff going on. And then for the next 30 minutes while we drove to the hospital, she just comforted me, talked to me, and just kept my brain away from everything that was happening in that moment. And then she could have left. We got in the hospital room and she could have left, but she stayed there. She hung out with me. She talked to me even after my dad got there. And right before she finally left, about an hour or two later, she gave me her card and she said, I want you to call me in 5 years because you're going to be okay.
Wow, that's so cool.
I was able to introduce my wife and my children to her this last Christmas.
Wow.
7 years later. And wow. She has since become a mental health resource officer that trains other police officers on mental health emergency responses.
That's amazing.
I hadn't seen her in 7 years because we'd since moved to Utah, chased some work at the time. And when I got to see her and I hugged her, it was like hugging a mom. You know what I mean? And she is a dear friend. And long story short, that's the snapshot version of Logan's trauma. But essentially, after that night sitting in the hospital, realizing the amount of people and the effort that were just going out of their way just to find me because they didn't know what was going to happen. And sitting down with the psychiatrist that next day, that really sparked everything because I felt for a moment there, as much as I always felt seen by my wife, and she always was holding spaces for me, having having this officer, having Katie, a woman, see me for my struggles, get me the help, start get me in the direction I needed. And then the next morning, the psychiatrist that I saw, another amazing woman who sat down and within 15 minutes had me dialed in. She's like, yeah, you're not just ADHD, you're bipolar. And I'll finish this story off with this. But my dad, love him to death, one of my best friends still is to this day, sitting there, no history of any mental health or any psychiatry in my family ever, like even in some of that that we know about. So this was a whole new experience for so many people. She's sitting there talking about the diagnosis and it's giving me more questions, but it's giving me answers. Now she's starting to talk about medication. She's starting to talk about all these things. And my dad pipes up and he says, we've heard that sometimes these mental health medications will change people. And we don't want that to change Logan. We don't want him to be numb. We want to keep our happy, lucky, just all around vibrant Logan. And she stops him and she says, the Logan that he's letting you believe is not the real Logan. I had nothing else to say because this woman I'd known for 15 minutes had me down that I was wearing a mask, and she basically allowed me to take my mask off in that point. And I think it was the first time I ever had somebody like give me permission to take my mask off and set it on the table for a second. And that's where my whole mission comes from, is that I'm trying to just give other guys permission to just set your mask down for a minute and let's talk. Because I promise you, it gets better if you take the mask off and you let people see who you really are, because then you can get real help.
Let's just take a second to process that. That was, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with us. That's, sounds like a lot of really hard struggles. So I'm so glad that you're still here and that you turned things around and made it a mission to be better. Really commendable.
Thank you. You know, with almost every story that I've heard from somebody, especially with bipolar, because I think it is such a difficult thing for any one person to get treatment and help around. I think like with depression and anxiety, there's some things that individually we can do to maybe climb out of those things or learn some skills. When it comes to bipolar, I think it's often the truly amazing, loving people in our lives that are able to really help us right the ship and truly turn things around for us. And it sounds like you just had an army of intervened now.
And one thing I will say to that, and I appreciate both of you guys saying that, one thing I will say is that I've also learned, and I don't highlight it as much, I learned that there were quite a few people in my life that were not people to discuss this with. And I know there are a lot of men out there, and sometimes it's even your partner. It's your wife, it's a boyfriend, it's a girlfriend, it's a parent, it's a sibling, a best friend, that when you do finally get the courage to speak up, you're met with pushback. Or I don't want to hear that. Or you're met with emasculating comments. You're met with people that aren't validating even remotely closer. If not, they're just adding to the pain. And so I was blessed that some of the people were there when they were. And then this is the thing, is a lot of people are like, I was diagnosed. They don't talk. It's been 8 years since then, and it's been a lot of work. And there's been a lot of failures, and a lot of times I fumbled the ball, a lot of times that I screwed up again. Because as I'm sure you guys know, there was a diagnosis, and then there's medication, but then there's habits, and there's personality traits, and there is just making dumb choices, period. But that's what, you know, as Dad Bods and Beards, our motto is that it starts with you. We can talk all day long. We can hold space all day long. We can share quotes and books and podcasts and inspirational TikTok, Instagram reels. But at the end of the day, even if you have a committed relationship, even if you have a best friend or a sibling, you are the only one who is going to be able to make a change in your life. And you have to feel that at a fundamental level, that I want to change something today to improve my tomorrow. And it is so much easier said than done. And I hate all of these, I know, and hate's a strong word. As a guy on social media, I really hate the, like, all you got to do is just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's so much deeper than that, because I feel you have to give the feelings that you're having space to be felt. Because if you just bottle those up or shove those down, it explodes all over everybody else in the room and everyone else in your life. I view the depression, the anxiety, the bipolar, all that stuff as like these beautiful parts of who I am that are just asking to be heard and felt and be like, hey, why am I feeling this right now? What is going on in my life right now that is making me feel so terrible about myself? Why am I so anxious? Why am I getting some extra gray hairs right now? And it's trying to identify the root causes. So it's not so much trigger avoidance, it's trigger management, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you were speaking to earlier, what's so difficult, vulnerability is that word is thrown around pretty willy-nilly and all the time these days.
Oh yeah.
And real vulnerability, as you were talking about, yeah, it opens us up, but it also allows for that space, that wound, to possibly be attacked, to possibly be weaponized. And so it does take true courage. But at the same time, when we open that vulnerability, we allow for that space to be healed. And we allow for others to apply the wonderful treatments. What were some of the early steps and maybe some of the stages in growth, in healing, and some of the more long-term kind of practices and routines that have now become a real part of your life? And
one of them was getting out of my own way, that my way of thinking was the only way of thinking, right? That there are people and professionals and opinions out there that are extremely well more thought out than my crazy ass brain was. And then opening myself up to the possibilities that there was more than even that. That, so for me, medication for a long time, I relied heavily on it in the beginning because sleep, I did not realize how important to your mental health sleep was. And still to this day, as an entrepreneur, a guy like that, I'm up till 2 o'clock in the morning doing stuff for my podcast and my stuff. At the same time, I was going days without sleep. And as the studies will show, just for the everyday average human who doesn't have a mental illness or doesn't mean mental health struggles, sleep deprivation will mess with your brain chemistry almost more than any other drug out there on an extended period of time, right? You'll get a lot of these quick hits. But so right at the beginning was like one of the first medications that she gave me was a freaking sedative. She's like, you need to sleep for a long time, dude. And it was the fact that she spoke to me very directly. Like it wasn't like she didn't. I appreciated at that point people who were just straight up direct with me. Because I was a fluffer for a long time. I was always just, oh yeah, this, oh yeah, whatever. When people just gave it to me, like point blank after that, it really helped a lot. But it was, in the beginning, it was going to psychiatry, looking at different forms of therapy. I did traditional talk therapy, and then I also did cognitive behavioral therapy, where we peeled back the layers of, this is the mental illness, and this is just Logan's bad habits. And this is Logan's poor choices, because medication will help keep you balanced and keep you here, but it's not going to change your personality. So mm-hmm. It was trying to put in the work to decipher what's a chemical imbalance and what is just something that I need to work on and take responsibility for as an adult, let alone a father and a husband and just a man in general. And then it was learning affirmations. Oh my gosh. Looking yourself in the freaking mirror and saying that you're worth it. And that you love yourself, because one of the things that I've lived with even to this day and I work on still to this day is guilt and shame. And I have a buddy that teaches an addiction recovery class more focused on actually pornography, and that as humans, we're more addicted to the guilt and the shame than we are the substance or the viewing material. And that we need to be more loving of ourselves, giving ourselves the permission. So for me, it was trying my hardest to stick to a routine. Because I was flying by the seat of my pants all the time. ADHD and bipolar and then the crippling anxiety and all those things came to a head. But it was making a decision and then trying to double down on that. I am not going to be one of the statistics. I am not going to lose my family. I am not going to be part of the statistics when it comes to the men's suicide rate. And that's all well and good. You can make those decisions, but it was the follow through. And there was a lot of times where I didn't follow through and I had to get back on the bus. But it was, for me, it was my wife and my children. At the end of the day, I promised that I was going to do everything that I could to be in my children's life as long as humanly possible. And one of the biggest conversations I had was I'm very blessed to have the relationship I do with my father-in-law. He's probably more of a friend than he is my father-in-law. And I married his oldest daughter. Like, I married his oldest child. Going to him after this whole ordeal was over and I was finally starting to think clearly and after a couple months and being vulnerable and opening up to him and saying, look, I know you trusted me to be the man to take care of your daughter and to be the man to be part of the relationship that made you a grandfather, and talking to him and feeling like I was this failure of the guy that trusted him with this gem of his daughter. And then him turning around and being like, just holding this space for me, but then appropriately calling me out and appropriately like helping me keep on that path of, hey, you got to keep going though. You got to be doing better. And I had moments with people like that that really meant something to me. And then I had moments with people that were not equipped to handle those conversations. And it was putting people in boxes and setting appropriate boundaries. I know a lot of guys will be like, oh, boundaries, that's snowflake stuff. It's life-saving stuff, in my opinion.
I agree. I also grew up in a very high-control religious group. And I also, you talk about experiencing the guilt and the shame, and then not believing in yourself is something that it was like ingrained in my head, like you're not good enough ever. And it makes things really difficult. So, man, it's so good when you have someone who's in your corner, who's keeping you accountable. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Also, as somebody who lost their father to suicide, I've got to praise you for still being in their life. Because I think that's, for me, not having a mentor, not having me that I can reach out to. I think as much as I'd like to believe that didn't impact me as much as it did, when I think of all the ways that I had to learn to grow myself, find other people to reach out to that weren't family, I think it's really difficult. And attempted myself, and the most impactful thing about that was the people that I wasn't thinking about, was being so wound up in that like myopic tunnel vision of depression and my own pain. And like you said, this faulty kind of belief that I'm going to make everybody else's life better by removing this burden off of their backs. And then waking up in a hospital bed and seeing my two little cousins who looked up to me in that same mentor way, I think was just, that image will never be taken from me. And I think is the one thing that will always keep me from ever even really entertaining that thought ever again. And I think one of the most helpful things for me has been just always removing that back door, that like plan, whether it was like plan B or plan Z, but just never having that on the table again, not only has kept me from going back to those really dark places, but also made me make the most of everything that's in front of me. Just the belief that, hey, there is no exit. There is no parachute. I have to go all in on this life. There isn't a second chance. And yeah, it's been staying away from that.
Being able to share something like that is never easy. And the biggest thing that I think a lot of people do, and you guys, you probably see this yourself, is people who, they either say, I'm sorry, and they're looking for a way where they can relate to you, or there's people who have no idea how to relate to you, and then they don't know what to say. The biggest thing that I've learned in the different people that I've been able to come in contact with and work with, and then just myself, is that I've learned when I talk to some people, like if I get phone calls from different friends or different, there's a couple of people that follow us and people that have been with us since the beginning that have my personal phone number. And one of them is on the other side of the world. And for me, one of the things that someone said to me years ago was, when they're starting to share these type of things of, do you want me to just listen, or do you want me to listen and then respond? And it sounds a little cold-hearted at first. So it's, do you want some advice in my opinion, or do you just need like a sounding board? And I get a lot of guys, especially being here in Utah. Utah is like this big influencer hub. I have bumped into people that you've probably seen their stuff all over the place. And one of the things that bothers me the most is I've met a lot of people that are not the same people in person as they are online. And a lot of people that sell courses that are not people you want to be giving your money to. And I'm huge on authenticity. Like, I thrive on the fact that if somebody runs into me, which one of the sponsors of our show, I bumped into him at Costco 8 months ago. And now we're doing an event with them as one of our main sponsors out in Florida in August. And he's driven past my house while I've got my kids playing in the front yard. And he was like, oh, hey, we found out we live 20 minutes apart. But I pride myself in knowing that I am trying to be the most authentic version of myself, because people are getting smarter and they can read authenticity. You can read it through social media. You can tell when someone is just being fake. And I wasn't always vocal about bipolar. I wasn't always vocal about all this. And for a long time, I hid this up until probably only about 3 years ago when I was barely starting on TikTok. I should have started on TikTok probably during the pandemic when everybody else did, because I started like post-pandemic, and I'm like, man, I probably would have been bigger. But I finally hit a point was like, my birthday sucked for me, because I was like, I was reminded that I almost didn't have another birthday. So my birthdays were dark. And I had this moment of, I am sick and tired of all of this work that I've done, and I still hate my freaking birthday. I get pissed off. I get rude. I'm condescending. I get angry and I cry and all this stuff. So I took to social media and I shared my journey. I shared like a 3-minute video of living with bipolar and all these feelings. And the response that I got was like, oh, it's time to stop using this as a crutch and start using this as a platform. Because there are so many men out there that are just begging for an opportunity or someone to give them permission to talk. Because men are great at taking away permission from other men on how to just act and be like this. You got to stand like this. You got to look like this. You got to work like this. You got to think like this, yada, yada. So if you don't fit those molds, it's extremely emasculating. So if you turn around and have a guy saying, hey, you being who you are at your core is the most masculine thing that you can do. The definition of masculinity for me is somebody who is so unapologetically authentic that they draw in other people because they are a safe place. And we're big on being protectors, right? Protectors create safe places. Like, you can call me a wuss, you can call me a bunch of other more vulgar names, but you can also call me when you're crying. And that's a big one for me, is when I realized in that moment that, like, I was subscribing to these other guys on social media that told me how to be a man. And I was never okay with myself. I was always listening to the wrong voices. So I slowly started building my tribe and my little pack of, no, we need to start redefining masculinity, because I'm not okay. And I ran a commercial construction and trucking company with my brother for a long time. I've seen the toughest of tough guys. I'm a big gym rat now. I see all the guys that they're covering up all their emotional pains with plates. But you just need one guy enough times telling you, like, hey, dude, like, I see you. And when you're ready to talk, I'm right here. So our whole gist with the podcast and everything we're trying to do is, as you guys see, we do a lot of funny, stupid stuff. But we try to bring guys in with the humor, and then, okay, now we're going to hit you with the heavy stuff. Now we're going to hit you with, let's go to therapy. It's really easy to be quiet. Guys act like it's really tough to just push it down. No, that's super easy. It's super easy to shut your mouth and pretend like nothing's going wrong. What's hard is telling somebody how you're feeling. What's hard is feeling like you have the strength inside you to be like, I don't have enough money to pay my rent next month, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And it is killing me. I don't feel like I'm worth loving. I don't feel like anybody respects me. If you start using the word feelings, you will push the right people out of your life and then bring the right people out of your life. Push the wrong people out of your life and bring the right people in. And it's hard. It's a hard thing to do. But then you hit this moment where you get one win out of it, and you're like, oh, that feels good. You're like, I like that. And then you find that level of authenticity. And that's what I try to do with some of my social media coaching and my consulting, is helping people find their authentic voice. That's whether you got 5,000 followers or 5 million. Imagine standing on a stage with 5,000 people staring at you, or 500 people staring at you. And they're like, hey, speak, dance, monkey. But when you find that vein of what is your passion and who you are and what you at your core believe to be like the right path of your life, you will find your people. And to end this rant, one of the best things that was ever told to me is when it comes to men's mental health, it's the same thing, right? It's almost kind of the movie Hangover, right? Like the wolf pack. The best way to heal a sick dog is you put him in a healthy pack. So if you put a guy who's struggling in a group of other men that are just holding space, but then also inviting him to make positive changes, because like just sitting there and whining all day, that's cool. Get it out. But there hits a point that you've got to do something about it. No. And that's where I think is the beautiful mashup of masculinity is like vulnerability, being able to talk about it and work through it and express those feelings. But then there's that, okay, now it's go time. And go time means medication, doctor, therapy, going out and going for a freaking walk, read a book, like just something to get you out of your own head.
Logan, can you share with us some of the things that you have going on? I'm actually like personally interested. One of the things Sky can tell you, I have a real aversion and serious like fear of putting myself out there, my story. I hate hosting. It's just, I've hired 2 social media managers and never used anything that they created. So I am personally interested myself, but also if you could tell our audience what you have going on coaching wise, group wise, and just a tad on the full spectrum of dad bods and beards.
Yeah. So there's a couple of different avenues that I spend all my time on, right? Obviously, first and foremost is my wife and my 2 kids. I will drop anything I have to be with them or to do what they need me to do. They're my best friends and they are my reason for literally being. And I'm not going to go down that road because this will be a 3-hour show. But I've got a 9-year-old daughter and my 7-year-old son, and then my wife. We've been married for just over 12 years, and I love them with every fiber of who I am and every definition of the word. But I took to social media a couple of years ago, we've talked about all this. And through that, I met Tyson, my co-host and my best friend. And it's really weird to meet your best friend when you're in your 30s and he's in his 40s. Like, it's really weird to meet another guy and you're like, is the movie Stepbrothers of, did we just become best friends? Yep, that's literally how it was for us. And we did a couple of YouTube lives together because he owns a grooming company called Copper John's, where we do, they're another emasculating topic is men's grooming. And we do beard oils, we do natural deodorants, we do stuff called ball wash, and it's exactly what you think it is. But it's all natural products. Teaching guys that like, hey, if you take care of your hygiene, you'll also feel better about yourself. And go figure, hey, your skin's clearing up a little bit. You don't smell terrible. And now we've got this massive community of big burly guys that have a full-blown grooming routine. And we teach you how to blow dry your beard, and we teach you how to straighten your beard. We teach you how to we're trying, like I said, redefining masculinity of taking care of yourself is not a feminine thing to do. And then that's where Dad Bods and Beards started, where he and I had these conversations on these YouTube lives and people were like, you guys, your chemistry is ridiculous. One minute you're funny. And then the next minute we just were riffing off each other, talking about being dads and being husbands and all that stuff. And we did some stupid social media stuff and we garnered millions of views by just being 2 friends that were unapologetically comfortable with each other. And we got a lot of people that were saying, oh, these guys, they're not just best friends, they're secretly gay. So we play into that a little bit. So it's like, you can't make fun of us if we make the joke first and we make it better than you. And then at the same time, it invites this thing of, we are like the oxymoron of, oh, so men being friends and sharing this bond and talking about their mental health and improving their lives is gay. Okay, then it's like, we make jokes that we are. But then we turn around and at the same time, it opens that avenue of like, we don't care who or what you subscribe to, we just care about you. I am personally a very big ally because I have people in my life that I am more worried about them feeling loved and that they exist than I am worried about any socio-political opinion about anybody else out there who doesn't care about them the same way I do. And so that led to, we're like, hey, we're going to start a podcast. And then funny enough, my father-in-law, the one I was telling you about, he came up with the name on accident. Because when I told him, he was the one that said, I was like, hey, we're going to start a podcast. And this was 2 years ago. And he's, what are you going to call it? Dad Bods and Beards. Every middle-aged white guy has a podcast. I was like, that's exactly what we're going to call it. And so that's where that came from. Because it's very memorable. It's funny. Every time I'm wearing this shirt, people are like, oh my gosh, I love that. And so we play into the dad bod. We play into the beard. We play into all this stuff. Because 90% of the guys out there, don't have a six pack. Like all these other influencers that you buy their course. And so what we try to do is we try to make the podcast like you're riding in the truck or sitting around the campfire with your buddies. Or you're sitting there in the back corner of the bar and it goes from cracking up to, oh, hey, I want to start this business to somebody's breaking down and you're just giving them their space for a minute. We just want it to be this, you're just our friends and you're in the room with us. And we like to have big, crazy, hyper successful entrepreneurs on the show. And then we talk about their top ramen stories. Hey, before you were it, what was it like? I did time in juvie. Nobody knew that. Oh, I was scrounging my money together to buy bologna and white bread. And now he picks between one of three different supercars to drive. But not that's the level of success you got to get to. And so what I like to do is I like to help people. I feel like I have this knack of pulling somebody's authenticity out because you can follow a trend or you can do the stupid TikTok dance or you can do whatever what's trending on social media. But if it's not authentic to you, it's not going to work. And the whole point of social media, and I feel like the way that we need it to go with what's already been out there for a couple decades, if you go back to when Facebook started, there's too much fake. There's too much look at me. There's too much the hook and the pull in and the call to action. What people need is they need relatability. And as we see after what happened in the pandemic, people need to be seen and they need to be heard. And they are looking for people to give them permission. So what I try to do, whether it's an individual or a brand or a business, what I do on my own personal side, aside from making my own social media, is I help people find who they are and help them broadcast it in the right way by knowing the ins and outs of social media because I've been doing it for 4 years now. And I've gotten to a million followers across platforms if you're adding everything up. And it's not about just the followers. It's about people feeling like they can trust you and they know who you are. And so what, like I said, that's what I try to do is I try to help people see the best parts about themselves and how to put it out there on social media. And Ryan, I get it. There's times where even as crazy as I've had a video go over 50 million views. I still have a really hard time filming anything in public. Like I get skittish. But it's all about that inner work and the self-love and the self-understanding and the affirmations. And it just takes a lot of time. And so I try to help give people the permission to do that and then show them how to do that after that.
I love that. Oh, sorry. It looked like you were going to say something, Ryan.
Oh, no. I was waiting for you to take us out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just so thrilled to have had this conversation with you. Thank you. You've shared so much with us. And it's really cool to find other men who are like along the same journey of, hey, like I'm a pretty manly guy, but I still have feelings and emotions and that's okay. Like as long as you're taking care of life and taking care of, you know, what you need to, what's it matter if you're emotional? And I just love that's your guys' message. And I just can't wait to watch you blow up.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. We're trying, right? What's funny is in the men's space on social media is you're seeing some of the guys that are seeing they're seeing the tides turn. The masculinity conferences and tours and things like that are falling off. Not that masculinity is a bad thing, but you're seeing a lot of guys realizing that, hey, the popping circumstance is over. The beating my chest and screaming into the woods it's more than that. Yeah. And I'll admit, I'm a sauna and a cold plunge guy. I get all that. Subscribe to that. But it's not one or the other. You have the very soft and effeminate side and you have the very tough and toxic masculinity side. My belief is that if you didn't have the ability to feel these emotions, that's when it doesn't matter. But if you have the ability, like you're stifling yourself and you're stifling your life quality by telling yourself that I shouldn't be thinking this way or I shouldn't be feeling this way. Your brain is a supercomputer. And like for me, when I've been in these moments where things are through the roof, I'm realizing my brain is activating on a higher level of percentage than it normally does. So it's like, maybe try to tap into that like a superpower. And so the last thing that I'll say is we had an amazing opportunity to sit down with Zachary Levi this last summer, or excuse me, this last winter. He was the star of the Shazam movies and the show Chuck. He got a little crazy political back around that time. But the same thing is, he's a mental health advocate. And we got to sit down with him, and mental health pushes past all barriers, all religions, all politics, everything, because everyone deals with it, whether it's all the stuff we talked about. But the thing he said that resonated the most with me is that when you have made it through the fire, not unscathed, when you made it out of the fire, you have a moral obligation to carry buckets of water back to the people who are still in the flames. And so for me, that's my mantra, is that I'm trying to create the spaces that 27-year-old Logan needed, because I know there's a lot of other guys out there and women who are getting the insights to men's mental health through podcasts like this. A little snapshot into a guy's brain, because we don't always feel comfortable sharing it with them.
Cool. Man, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate you and your story and everything you guys are doing. And thanks for sharing that story. I used to really like Zachary Levi. I watched all of those, Chuck and all that stuff. And I just think that it's really cool that he's a mental health advocate also.
He's got a really cool nonprofit that provides therapy for people who can't afford it. It's called Nerd HQ.
I love that.
So we try to see very in the middle of the road. We don't go political. We just go towards everybody needs the help. Yeah. And so somebody's got a voice. And that was one of those ones that, like, dang it, that was really terrible timing. Our episode came out right when you're really getting slammed.
Yikes. That happens.
But he's a cool dude. But he's at his core, he's a cool dude when it comes to some things. But
good. Cool. Everybody, I just want to thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Hey Man, It's Okay. Please check out our website, heymanitsokay.com. Please be sure to like, comment, subscribe, and listen to our other podcasts, man. We've had a lot of really cool episodes. So just check us out and send us an email if we haven't talked about something that you want to hear. And from Sky, everybody, it's okay to not be okay. And I'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, guys. This was awesome. Thanks, Logan.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Logan.